The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game live from downtown Las Vegas. We are hanging out Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben Wilson in for Gil here today, as well as Thursday and Friday with our producer, Kelly Bidlin. Great to be back with you, Kelly. I missed you yesterday, man, on Live Bet Sunday. We had the great Will Hill filling in for you, but glad you're back in the saddle. We both had interesting weekends. You battling the illness, and then I drove 8 hours in a day on Saturday, which is always fun.
Oh yeah, that was a fun one. You were down in Arizona calling a game, right? Yeah, that was. Yeah. So what did you do? You did the whole drive down, call the game, and drive right back.
Yeah, I was in no man's land. It was Prescott, Arizona, about a 4-hour drive, and what, I'm on the air at noon the next day. You get off the air at 9:15-ish. Vegas Nighthawks, by the way, of the Indoor Football League, clinched their first ever postseason berth.
So there we go.
Shout out to Vegas Nighthawks.
Go Nighthawks. Caw,
going dancing. But I'm sitting there. I'm like, if I had to wake up at 6 anyway, if I'm going to drive back for the show, so I might as well just knock it out. And middle of nowhere, Arizona, late at night. That speed limit's what, 75, and that is quite literally just a suggestion.
It is wild out.
Putting the cruise control like 88, and I'm like, all right. Let's just get home.
I will never forget moving out here and driving through Texas and Arizona, and it is you see speed limit signs higher than you've ever seen in the United States, and like you said, just a suggestion for most people.
I made it back in 3:30 Saturday night, so that was good. Got home. I did not even set an alarm for the Sunday show because it's like, it's noon. You don't need to. And then I wake up and it's like 10 o'clock and I'm going, oh boy. We got to get ourselves going today. One thing that we were talking about, though, just our first thoughts here for the Open Championship, Kelly, want to get your just first takeaway here. There's so much to break down, and we'll do the deeper dive breakdown. But as we go to Royal Troon here for the Open Championship, that is the big event we'll be talking about this week since we have no baseball until Friday. Some teams don't play until Saturday. Coming out of the All-Star break, this is really the big one for us to really dive deep and break down. Scottie Scheffler, your favorite, as expected, plus 450. Did not play, though, at the Renaissance Club over the weekend at the Scottish Open. Rory McIlroy, he and Tyrrell Hatton, the highest finishers from the last time the Open Championship in the Rota was at Royal Troon. Those two were T5 back in 2016. Hatton's 25-1. McIlroy, second favorite, plus 750 here at DK. And it should be pointed out right off the top before we even get into any sort of thought on the course, Kelly, that weather is always the most impactful of any of the four majors at the Open Championship because it is Lynx Golf and it is so wide open. And already here, it's Monday, and we're getting into kind of the conflicting reports of what the weather is actually going to be like. You and I just looking at different sources during the break. The report from the RNA, which you always love this report, when they say unsettled conditions as it pertains to weather for this week. They're expecting Thursday gusts in the 25 to 30 mile an hour range with some rain in the morning. But again, it's weather. It's Monday. That could all change. It's at least a good place to start, though, as far as an Open Championship that has a lot of question marks, way more questions than it has answers when you have a favorite in Scheffler who didn't even play last week, which was certainly an interesting decision, to say the least.
Yeah, we had a couple guys kind of decide to take their own approaches to preparing, right, for the Open. And you see that from time to time with the majors. Guys decided not to play the week before. But, yeah, a big tournament that we had over this past week. I love the Scottish Open. I think it's a great tournament. It keeps getting better every single year, it feels like. I know there's a lot of money behind it.
It's so weird just visually to have it on CBS because you just don't think of it that way. But they've done such a great job in the drama the last 2 years. Rory over McIntyre last year, and then this year McIntyre over Scott by a stroke.
Yeah,
it's just odd visually.
Yeah, and I do like the setup of you get the two tournaments because you had the ISCO going on here, then the old Barbasol here stateside in Kentucky, and it is, with these signature events these days, this is something a little bit different that we've seen some more of in the past, but they're literally split PGA Tour and DP World Tour events, and it becomes a little bit more like an invitational almost that we still get because there's some sponsors exemptions then as well, and it's just a little bit different format than what you see at these signature events, so requires some different handicapping when you're approaching stuff like that. But the Open as we approach this week at Royal Troon, we've got long shots. We'll be doing a special episode for tomorrow, like we do for all the majors. So make sure to catch that. That will be myself, Dave Ross, and Wes Reynolds talking about that. I think going back and looking at 2016 is a great place to start, though, and a couple things to note. Ben, of last time we saw this, you're going to see differences from last week to this week. And it's great. I love the Scottish Open. But when you see the Scottish Open every year, is you don't see a true links-style course. So there's really not going to be a lot of carryover from what you saw at the Scottish Open to what you see at Royal Troon this week. You also get at Troon, the first, what, six holes, I believe it is, are right on the ocean. So it is really, as much as we want to look at some weather forecasts and stuff like that, we know what it, you know what it's like playing right on the ocean, and it's kind of, you know, it's windy, it's gusty, kind of no matter what. So that's always interesting. With every Open, the biggest piece of advice I can give is, for me, the major I usually bet the least on. Will say, Ben, by betting form, though, coming into this is pretty hot right now, so I'll probably be betting this a little bit bigger than I normally do. And why I say I usually ratchet back on this a little bit is just because the weather play, it is such a big deal, and we've seen it affect so many tournaments in the past. And yes, you can handicap, to see which players play best in the wind and stuff like that, but you just never know really when stuff's going to hit guys at what time. And it's a tough part of the game to handicap, where you don't get that as much, you know, when you see a U.S. Open or a PGA Championship or the Masters.
Fair to say the tournament where the modeling probably comes in, as much as you're still going to do it, but a tournament that has the most feel-based bets based on pedigree, and you're talking weather, the start times, the tee times matter so much. Fair to say that is all true for this major relative to the others?
Absolutely, and that is why I dial back a bit, right? When I know I can't lean on my numbers as much, it's not going to make me as confident. Just going back to 2016, this is a great example of what you're going to see this week. Henrik Stenson won at 20 under. Okay, this course is easy, right?
That was such a duel.
Problem, right? But you go back and look at this scoreboard from 2016. Plus four was the cut. Four over was where the cut happened. So, that is how difficult it was playing. 17 guys finished under par. And then you had two guys completely run away with it. It was Henrik Stenson and Phil Mickelson just battling for the last couple days of the event, especially on the final day. And Stenson wins 20 under, Mickelson 17 under, and you got J.B. Holmes coming in third at 6 under par. So I think make sure when you're really looking at this event this week, keep all that stuff in mind. This, of course, is still going to play rather tough. Yes, there are some gettable holes, and just like any other Open, when the conditions are quieter, it's going to be easier to attack. Biggest piece of advice I can give is we're going to be talking about this all week. I'm going to be making some bets earlier, going to have to make some bets earlier for some content we've got coming up. But longer you can wait to make bets, the better, when you have a better idea of what the weather's truly going to look like. And with everybody starting on the first tee, and Ben, you know this well, when the golf's played over there this time of year, and it's so much more daylight, right, lasts so much longer than usual, you get these longer spread out tee times. And if you can have a wave advantage then with wet weather coming in. If it hits early, it hits late, and it could affect some things. So I would definitely say wait as long as you can before you get jumped to put some bets in. Now, having 100%. Said that, are there bets you want to make before numbers move? Absolutely, like there is every single week when you're betting golf. I mentioned this last week before the Scottish Open. I think I mentioned it a couple weeks before. I'm basically on bet Colin Morikawa every time out until he wins, because he is right there every single week. That's where his game's at right now. So that is the first bet that I made. I'm a little upset. Wes brought this up on Long Shots last week. It was such a good point. You look at the odds board for the Scottish Open, there were so many numbers that you were seeing basically the same thing listed for the Open or even a little shorter when Scottish Open didn't have Scottie Scheffler or any of the LIV guys. So I'm a little uncomfortable betting Colin Morikawa. I just bet him this morning at 17-1 right here at Circa. I'm a little uncomfortable betting him at 17-1 when I bet him just last week at 16-1 in a much weaker field. That's kind of what you're dealing with this week. I still love Morikawa, where his game's at right now. The putter has come on strong this year, Ben, and his game. If that gets rolling, he becomes one of the top tier golfers in the world, and that's where he's at right now.
The other comp too, you're talking about weak field last week weaker field last week compared to the major championship. Robert McIntyre goes out and wins at 40-1. Now he's sitting there 35-1 this week.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Fresh off of a win, are we advocating a bet on Robert McIntyre to win? I don't think so. On that. Yeah, that is a very good point. He's shortened to 14-1 now there at DK. And I think the overarching theme, just to think about, as you were talking earlier, Kelly, it's that, yes, we all remember Stenson and Phil with this amazing duel back in 2016, but that was the exception to the rule. That was not how the rest of the field actually played out. But what you kind of think about, though, how Stenson was able to attack, and the weather was very, very fair compared to what we expect to see it this week, and that really helped out, especially for the later tee times. It was very fair as the day got later. Stenson was just mashing the ball. Remember all those – he was just – on it with the driver, and he was able to shorten this course so effectively. So you naturally think about some of the preeminent drivers. The big word is if with the weather, and it does not sound like it will be nearly as good, but there is a thought that say you look at like a Ludwig Aubert, who's been in such good form until you get down to the final nitty-gritty of a tournament. For guys who drive the ball so well and will need to at a course like this, I mean, you can make it a completely different sort of layout if you are able to take advantage off the tee. Yet that qualifier of if is why a lot of people, I would say so far from who I've talked to, Kelly, are saying, look, probably not making any bets until at the very earliest Wednesday late afternoon into Wednesday night, because we just will not know, especially for those first early versus late waves on Thursday, what to actually expect with the weather.
That is the way that I would be recommended to attack it. We're going to be breaking it down, all the next couple days, going through the course, what stats, especially on long shots, what stats to really be looking at from golfers for this week if you are doing any of your modeling at home yourself. Biggest piece of advice I can give is circle some guys and then wait to see what weather's like and where they're teeing off at come Thursday.
I think that is a very good piece of sound advice here as we get the week started. Open Championship Week here on A Numbers Game. When we come back, we've yet to talk NFL. We'll do that a little bit. We're going to start with some general division previews here this week. We'll talk the AFC East when we return after this.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get ready to win big this NFL season with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on our football special before the end of July and get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. That saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price. And with VSiN Pro, you'll get access to our daily best bets, exclusive betting splits data, proven betting systems and analysis from professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and all our special edition betting guides like the NFL Guide, packed with detailed team, division, and conference breakdowns with season win totals, futures, props, and awards, best bets. Don't wait. Sign up before the end of July and get VSiN full pro access through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. That is VSIN.com/subscribe. Still to come this hour, Mike Somich from The Handle will join us at the desk. I always hesitate to say in studio, Kelly. I hear Bar Canada. It's really joins us at the table. At the desk here, Bar Canada at the D. He'll be with us in about 50 minutes talking some MLB futures. As we walked in today, it was
I'm pretty sure he's on Skype, unless there's something that I don't.
Oh, okay, never mind. Well, that's funny because I saw him. He was with me at the desk on Friday.
Okay.
He was starting his weekend jaunt here.
It's always tough when he's here for his weekends and you don't know when he's flying out. He has joined us at the Shield before, so you are not wrong to think that. Yeah, we call it the Shield. We call it the Shield, Ben, because look at it. It's formed like a shield.
That is very true. I was taught in journalism school not to assume, but I was also taught in journalism school to break rules, and I just did break a rule there of assuming, but alas, that's why we don't do that. I was also going to point out
I could be wrong too. Maybe Mike will be walking up any second here.
That'd be awesome. That'd be hilarious. We're about to find out. I don't want to make a bet on it because I feel insecure about that.
I feel like he would have told me. I feel like he would have
probably. It's also early. Alas. The other thought, too, is we're walking in today. What a weird feeling. SEC Media Days is underway, and to see Nick Saban doing an interview, but as an ESPN analyst now from Hoover, Alabama, at SEC Media Days, I don't know, man. Just felt weird. That's just a random comment.
Yeah, I mean, some of these guys can't get away from the game, right? Like, it's their life. They don't know what to do without it. And I think that's Nick Saban a little bit.
Just take, like, 1 year, man. You've made how many millions of dollars? You have how many houses and... But the thing is, if you're a high-level college football coach, it doesn't matter how much money you're making. You never have any time to enjoy it because you're recruiting, going to booster dinners, all that stuff. You're basically a politician for 365 days out of the year. Can you just take a year to enjoy all the stuff you have?
I'm with you. That's what I would be doing.
Like, also, it's media days. It's a figment of reality that has just been created out of nothing to give us content in the middle of July. Like, why do you have to be there, Nick? Alas, that's just my 30-second take on Nick taping at SEC Media Days. We are going to get into some NFL right now because we've yet to talk about the league today. There really has not been much as far as odds movement recently. The one piece of news from over the weekend in what's been a tough offseason for the Minnesota Vikings here for a variety of reasons, but Jordan Addison gets arrested Friday near LAX on a DUI charge, which, I mean LAX, it's already a zoo enough even driving in that area for anybody who's been there, but that's not great for Minnesota as that's a team who's already at the bottom of the odds board in the NFC North, but not good to see. And I will talk NFC North I think later in the week, Kelly, but for now we'll go AFC East. Just wanted to point that out in case you missed that there on the Vikings front. But the AFC East here, and if there are any bets that we have made here or gotten in pocket, I've not made any bets yet, Kelly, but I think it's interesting to at least circle back to a conversation we had on this show. If you go back to, what was it, mid-February, we were just doing early thoughts on risers, fallers in general, starting that whole offseason cycle and just kind of comparing to where our thoughts are at now. And Miami was a team I think you and I were both down on in the very early stages, pre-free agency, pre-draft of, okay, you lose DC and Vic Fangio. Mm-hmm. You have so many question marks on the defensive end with some key pieces, say like a Jalen Phillips. We don't know how effective he will be coming back off injury. That really hurt them toward the end of last year. 1-6 against teams above 500 and a group that I think had a lot of question marks in general. Yet I think as we've gotten more distance from that, the general prevailing thought from a lot of respected bettors is this is a play-on team in 2024. So that's at least where I wanted to start on this. They're technically the third betting favorite at 2-1 in the division, but just kind of a specific deep dive here on the Dolphins is our initial take on them, does it hold up, or is there reason to believe that actually the offseason moves have actually been fruitful here for the Miami Dolphins? I find myself still a little bit skeptical, even though they have brought in a lot here in the offseason.
Yeah, I'm still skeptical. I'll say that. I think I'm still a little bit worried about what they're going to get defensively. And then the one thought that I can't get out of my head is the league going to catch up on Mike McDaniel a little bit, right, defensively with him? With him being able to throw everything out there that he's done offensively, now with Tyreek Hill, in the building for a year, and now that's all on tape, I'm just wondering if there's. I mean, I'm not doubting the guy is one of the best offensive minds in the league, but is there something that some of these defensive coordinators maybe catch on to a little bit with him and Tua? I'm a little interested to see how that plays out, Ben, and I think for all those reasons, and then Aaron Rodgers' return, it's really kept me away from making any bets on or against the Dolphins. I'm not really saying this is a team I'm looking to fade, but I think when we're talking just the futures in division price, win total, all that stuff, I don't know if I have the confidence really in this team, and this kind of applies to the Jets too. Real confidence to go bet an over or an under on their win total or for them to win the division. When it comes to this division overall, I think as long as Josh Allen's in Buffalo, I'm too obsessed with Josh Allen's ability. And I think where he brings their floor to is so high from what one guy can do at the quarterback position that I'm still going to always lean, even with Aaron Rodgers there in New York, and I think that Jets team is loaded on paper. There's three really good teams there. I'm still going to give Josh Allen and Buffalo the edge over all three. So I think then that means New York, Miami, 2-3 in one order. And I don't really know where they fall in that. The one bet I've made in this division is for the Patriots to have the fewest wins in the NFL. That is one I bet at plus 350. I think under their win total is probably a good bet. It might be one that I still make here. I just think with this division that they're facing – the talent on that roster, the schedule that they have overall, asking them to get to five wins, I think is going to be tough. But Jacoby Brissett, especially if he's, I've got a little bit more trust, they might be able to pick up one or two if he's starting under center. Week one or through week five or six or something like that before Drake May takes over. But it'd be only underlooks for the Patriots for me. Jets, Dolphins, man, I think those are two teams I'm not going to be getting involved in, at least before the season, right? Right. We could see, some of these questions I have about the Dolphins, and then the Jets is just more going back to last year, right? It's more of the, okay, let's see, how does it all work together with Aaron Rodgers there for more than, three quarters of a game?
More than three plays.
Yeah, three plays of a game. That's still interesting to me to see how that plays out with the Jets. Jets, Dolphins, I think before the season, not going to be any bets for me on those two. to.
It would be really interesting if you had the ability to – we always talk about the forecast for the top two, which are very popular bets, if you could do a bottom two forecast. I'm sure there are some books that offer that because you basically are baking in, okay, New England to be the last place team feels – like a very, very high likelihood of happening. And then you're basically betting on, okay, of the top three, Buffalo, New York Jets, and Miami, who is going to be the disappointment and finish third within that division. I also look at Miami as we're kind of doing the deeper dive into them as just you think about how tightly packed all the three teams are, at least the top of the AFC East. A lot of individual small things that stick out on the schedule where, say, week one, you're getting Jacksonville. It's a team who prepares in the exact same environment you do in camp. That's not really an edge as much as you can have the shade on your sideline and make it 30 degrees hotter on the other side. The Bills is a night game week two. That, to me, is a significant hampering of some value. I mean, we've seen what's happened when Buffalo's had to go to Miami early in the season, how crazy those games have been, how Buffalo has struggled in the heat. Now that's a night game. In a similar fashion, I mean, your first three home games, one's against a team from Florida who's used to the conditions. The other two are night games. That is the best time of year if you're in Miami to take advantage of your home field. And yet two of the three are neutralized and the other is against a team from Florida. Right out of the gates, that is a thing where in a division so tightly packed, purely based on schedule, I just don't like that a baked-in automatic advantage is now being, for the most part, neutralized.
Yeah, no, and I agree. It's the these are the things, though. This is where, as soon as the schedules come out, right, it's so important to look at this stuff. Because I think the NFL schedule makers over the years have actually done a great job of trying to level this stuff out, right? You know where Miami has an advantage in their schedule to not send so many cold weather teams down there to play early in the year. And then vice versa, right, to not have teams like Miami force them to go play too many snow games, come November, December.
And yet, Miami at Green Bay on Thanksgiving, yep, at Cleveland week 17, at the Jets week 18. So they kind of got shafted in that result, in that regard at least for this year. As far as the defense of rankings here, because a lot of the respected sites are now putting out positional rankings here. I just looked at PFF, Kelly. Miami, 25th best defensive line, 20th best linebacking core. Still a good secondary. That is top five, but also what do you expect in Anthony Weaver? Brand new DC comes over from Baltimore as their D-line coach, so has not been in the system. That's where a lot of the question marks for me lie. And an offensive line that is ranked around the bottom 10, and so much of that has to do with Teron Armstead having missed 11 games over the last two seasons. That is another huge question mark for Miami this year, and it's why I think both of us are kind of in a wait-and-see approach mode. We're not buyers. We're not totally sellers yet, but I'm definitely more on the pessimistic side.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I love Mike McDaniel. I love what he's done offensively, but a lot of that stuff he's schemed around the past, right? We don't run more horizontal stuff to get away from the offensive line issues.
No question. Mike Somich from The Handle. He's going to join us next as we continue here on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The Monday edition of A Numbers Game continues live from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben, he's Kelly, and we're about to welcome in Mike Somich. And I just lost a bet, Kelly. I was wrong. Would you like can I give you a cabana at Stadium Swim for your troubles, Kelly?
Yeah, you can. Bet. Absolutely. Anytime.
I tried to offer one to Will Hill yesterday, and he won a trivia bet with me on the 2011 Home Run Derby winner, which if you can name that, or if Mike can, you guys will also be included in the
No clue.
No clue. I like how Kelly's just right away. I have no idea. Anyway, we go out to our progressive guest line. I saw him in person on Friday. It was great to see Mike Somich. He's back in California. Great to see you, Mike. If you can name the 2011 Home Run Derby contest winner, I'll move Will's reward right over to you, since he declined on account of the fact he has a family and is unable to come out to Vegas anymore.
I mean, I'll take a stab at Pete Alonso, but I have no idea.
How old was Pete Alonso in 2011?
2011.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought you said 2021.
Oh, no, 2011. Yeah, sorry.
That would be Robinson Cano won it, huh?
Robinson Cano, yes.
Hmm.
Robinson Cano. Yeah, I brought that up to Will just because we were talking about how how we weirdly remember home run derbies, I think more so because it is the one-off. Like, there's no other sport. So in our day and age where we just are used to watching 6-7 games at the same time, the Home Run Derby weirdly still kind of resonates just because it is this single one-off event. Are you doing anything derby-wise, all-star game-wise, Mike, or is there a strategy for you that if there's nothing, you're kind of like, I feel like it's either like you're all in or you're like, hey, I'm sitting out. I don't feel like there's anything worth trying to extrapolate as far as value goes.
Well, it's funny you mentioned having a family. This event has changed for me since I had a family, because when I was single, all the guys would get out. We'd all go out. We'll go to a bar. We go to one person's house, get a bunch of beer, get a couple pizzas, drop in a couple pizza bet-sized bets, and then have two guys that we're rooting for in the Home Run Derby. Problem for me now is, like, this is a three-hour event. I don't have 3 hours to sit down and watch people try and hit baseballs out of a stadium with no future value of it. So I bet a little bit of Hunter Granderson just because I wanted to have something on it. Or Gunnar Henderson, I'm sorry. Just to have a little something on it. But, this is not the event it used to be for me.
Yeah. Hunter Granderson, that's a good spoonerization.
Just flipped it around.
As we talk Home Run Derby All-Star Game. But I think more so than anything, what bettors like you, as much as we talk about these things in here and now, the interesting bets to make are how the futures are reposted. And it's not just division, league, and World Series, because those are up every day. But now you get win totals here, which are posted at the halfway point. Even though we're a little bit past halfway, now a lot of books, DraftKings has reposted these now that we have this three-four day. Some teams don't even play till Saturday, which is crazy, but it is a dead period, so to speak. What do you look at now is you've got these things priced, and I'm sure that is the one area where now that they're posted, whether it is taking a look at strength of schedule or perceived moves at the deadline, who kind of stands out from that angle?
Yeah, I haven't played or I haven't actually looked at the win totals yet for the second half. It's something I'm planning on diving into today. But for me, it's one of those markets where I think it's definitely worth taking a piece of and hitting. I start out with, okay, who is playing way above and way below expectation? And then do we believe that's going to be on the same pace? A lot of times you'll see these books just say, okay, we're just going to extrapolate out from what we've seen in the first half of the season. I believe it's a little more nuanced to it. You can kind of go in and say, okay, like the Red Sox, for instance, do we believe that they are actually as good as they played through the first half of the season? Are they a team that you can go against? The Blue Jays, are they as bad as they've been? Can you go against them? I think the Royals are an interesting case. It's a team I took over before the season started, but they've really slowed down, and they've also really struggled on the road. Is that a team that you can look at and say, I'm interested in fading the second half for them, even though I have the full season over? So going to be a market that I dive into, but I think there is a ton of value here just from the way the lines are made perspective, because this is not a line where it's like, okay, we're going to take half of the full season number plus the current win total. That's going to be the new win total. There are adjustments that the books have made. And because of that, it allows you to then decide, do I want to plant my flag now that I've seen these teams play half a season?
It's also where having bet preseason win totals now can give you a better portfolio simply because there are middle opportunities. Royals, a great example. They're 85.5 just reposted. What you had them preseason, right? Over, Mike?
Over 66.5.
So I'd say you got a pretty wide
middle.
If you want to take advantage, you could make a case. There's a very good chance that they land within that 19-game spell. As far as a couple teams here who are definitely in that category of they've overachieved and there are now question marks as to whether they can hang on to their division, Milwaukee in the NL Central, 4.5-game lead over the Cardinals, and then in the AL Central, the Cleveland Guardians, 4.5 up on the Twins. Of those two, do you believe one is more likely here to fall back a little bit? And if so, is there a team you're looking at futures-wise you certainly believe could catch up?
I believe they both could fall back. I just don't know who catches Milwaukee. Like the rest of that division is awful as well. Like I would like to make a case for the Cubs as a Cubs fan and someone who has seen that team play well at certain stretches this season, but I can't see them being able to jump up and go get Milwaukee. I do think that Cleveland is one of those teams where you got to look at them and say, this is a fade team toward the second half. They played very easy schedule the first couple months. We saw them absolutely rack up wins, one of the best records in baseball. But look, the offense is overperformed. The pitching is overperformed. This is a whole team that is due for regression at some point during the season. And I look there at the Twins, who are sitting in second, plus 475 to win the division. That's a team where I kind of like the pitching staff. I think they're as good or better than the Guardians. The bats have gotten going recently. To me, the Twins would be the team. I'm sorry, the Twins are sitting there at plus 220. The Twins would be the team that I would take if I'm looking at someone inside those divisions to win, if it's not the leader. So I do have a little bit of Twins bet. I made it last weekend. I got a little bit better number than that, but still the plus 220 I think is worthwhile.
Twins, so frustrating too, because I was on them yesterday, and just as you start to think, all right, here come the Twins, you're the number one offense against lefties, and you get no hit going into the seventh against Blake Snell, who had an ERA over 7. Then you tie the game in the ninth, only to lose on a walk-off inside the park homer where you had it was really an inside the park Little League homer because it was a triple and then an error. It's like the Twins. Could they just stay out of their own way? But it's why we kind of look at divisions like that, Mike, where you definitely feel like they are more wide open. And it's sort of like, I guess in the Brewers' case, if there isn't the obvious team, to come back and beat them and overcome them in the division, that's where I think the win total comes into play, right? Because they were, you know, a high 70s, low 80s win total team. You're looking at 88.5. As much as they are going to get Devin Williams back here, which is the closest thing for them to a big signing at the deadline, set to come back right after the All-Star break, and they did make the trade for Aaron Civale, I still have big, big concerns, and Dallas Keuchel was just DFA'd after a poor start the other day. That experiment did not go well. That could maybe be an angle. Instead of trying to just throw a dart, right, at one of these NL Central teams, you just look at a team on an under win total, and you take that part of the handicap out of the equation.
Exactly. I mean, that's where why you want to look at who's behind them and who's chasing from a division perspective. If you can find someone you like, great. Take the plus money price. Try and take a division price. But if you have a team that you want to fade that's atop of the division and there isn't anyone that you really like behind, now is a great time to be able to come in on the under in a specific win total. And I will say one other thing about the NL Central. I made a absolutely kooky bet when I was in Las Vegas this weekend that I may end up regretting here. But I took the Pirates at 110-1 to win the NL. With the simple thought that the Braves, I don't think are going to be able to come back nearly as good as we thought they were the preseason. You're going to get the Dodgers team a little more healthy, so you'll see a better version of the Dodgers here. And I respect the Phillies, but if the Pirates can sneak in and I get that rotation, specifically Skeens and then number two, they've got two top-end pitchers. I expect them to buy at the deadline. If they do and they sneak in as a wild card, they're a team I'm interested in being able to win a couple series. And when you have a number like 110-1, and all you need to do is win a couple series, it is very, very easy to be able to start buying off some of that incrementally and make sure you have a profitable ticket. Even if you lose your hedge in the first round and you lose your hedge in the second round, you can still make money off 100-1. And when you look at their odds to make the playoffs, we're talking single digits, so it's not like this is a crazy idea that they can get in.
Pittsburgh, a game and a half back in New York right now, and it's not like the wild card teams, even starting with St. Louis, who's the number two team, a half game ahead of New York. Not like those are teams lighting the world on fire. It's no 27 Yankees out here as far as the race for those second and third wild card spots in the NL. 5-1 for the Pirates to just make. And their stud Paul Skeens, who will start for the NL tomorrow in the All-Star game, he's now down to 5-1 to win Cy Young here. If you were for a Pirate bettor who's sitting there like, oh, all right, long shot, but I want maybe that shorter runway sort of bet, either make the playoffs or Skeens to win the Cy Young, what's a better play at this point as we've seen both of those odds, especially Skeens, get unbelievably cut down and get super short?
Yeah, the Cy Young to me is wild. I can't believe he's sitting at 5-1. But this is like we don't have anyone that you can really point to and say, okay, they should be the clear-cut favorite. And if Skeens is able to do what he's been able to do throughout the full season, then yes, he's going to be a guy who's in the conversation. I still have concerns that if the Pirates don't go for it at the deadline, we don't see a full season of Skeens. I think at the rookie of the year standpoint, pretty much three more starts and he's locked this thing up. From the Cy Young standpoint, he will need to pitch the entire rest of the season, and he will not have to be given any time off during that period. I'm not sure we see that from the Pirates. I don't know if we go to every 6 days he pitches. I don't know what we want to do from an innings limit. But the fact that they took him out after throwing 99 pitches and having 7 no-hit innings kind of gives you a little bit of reading the tea leaves of what to expect from the handling of Skeens as we go down the stretch here as well. I think it's hard for him to win the Cy Young simply because he's not going to have the counting numbers from an innings perspective to be able to get there if they do decide to pull the plug at any point for any reason.
Yeah, here's the thing I keep coming back to on that start on Thursday. Mike, it's like, if you're Pittsburgh, why not just have him go out there? If he throws more pitches, well, now he can't pitch in the All-Star game, and you protect him. You're like, it's selfish, but you're helping your team. Why wouldn't a Pittsburgh just done that?
I don't know. I mean, look, you also haven't had a no-hitter in forever if you're Pittsburgh, and this is like your guy. Like, you need all the buzz you can get around a Pirates team when this organization has just not been relevant for a long time, and all of a sudden, you're relevant. Go for it. Like, go after it. He threw 120 pitches all year last year at LSU. It was crazy to me.
Mike Somich with us here at A Numbers Game. Always great to see you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Have a good one, guys.
You know, it was karma, Kelly. For 2008, the Pittsburgh official score denied CC Sabathia what would have been a no-hitter. It was an obvious error. They called it an infield hit. That was karma. 16 years later. We'll wrap up the show next. Final thoughts on the Home Run Derby and best bets when we come back.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now, go to our new look, VSiN.com, optimized for mobile, where we have all of our best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides. Right now, breakdowns on the newly released NBA win totals from our Zach Cohen. All but three teams available right now to bet on at DK. And the Home Run Derby is tonight. Adam Burke has a full breakdown on what to expect in the Derby. We'll also have later in the day, Tyler Shoemaker will post his best bets from his model for WNBA, as there is a full card tomorrow, all at VSiN.com. As we are back for the final time, big thanks to our technical directors, Andrew Ingold, Matt Hicks hanging out. We've also got, let's see, Chris. Is anybody else I missed? Chris behind the scenes, Kelly.
You got them all. Ryan Pineda built graphics for us this morning. Ryan,
Chris Foster doesn't get enough love. Does great work for us, as always. Thank you, Ryan Pineda. Appreciate it. So, I felt bad because Justin Monteith tailed me on that Twins bet yesterday, and it lost. But at least he had enough conviction in me to back me. And at least he knew it was baseball, so stuff happens.
There you go. Yeah.
Some days you bet the best offense against certain armed pitchers, and then they get no hit for six innings. It happens. That's why I think the All-Star break for all of us mentally is a good time right now, although kind of shocking that there's no WNBA today, Kelly. It's like, come on. What else is there going on? It's the Derby and nothing else. Yeah, all we have is Summer League today.
Yeah, interesting scheduling this year, which I like. I think there's been a lot of Mondays they've kind of taken off, I love the day games that they've been doing.
The kids' camp days?
Yeah, exactly.
We were having a conversation off air about headsets and getting used to it. I'd say the one thing you cannot ever get used to as a broadcaster is calling a basketball game that is on a school kids' day game, because in your ear, it's just – the loudest shrieks humanly possible. And the thing is, it's not even for the home team. It's just anything. Like, I was doing a...
Oh, that's great.
I was doing a...
And I don't feel bad for you at all. It's like one of the few things in sports I love, yeah, with like Major League Baseball. Like the Marlins.
The
like
shriek.
The Marlins are trash how many years? Like every other year, right? Like, I mean, it is just every year in a row it seems like such a bad team. Yet the summer is always full of camp kids out there for the day, having a blast and still enjoying the game, getting a hot dog. I love seeing it.
Like doing those 1 p.m. tips, like you're already kind of groggy. You're just like, you're not used to being like on, you know, for a game specifically that early. And then you see like the caravan of orange shirts walk in and you're just like, oh, God. Oh boy!
I never thought about it.
You start talking to your audio guy. You're like, "Hey, man, can you just have it? You know, my eardrum might explode."
Yeah, blast the volume of myself.
Try to drown out the crowd noise, then you got to go one off because you just can't take it anymore. Actually, we can talk to Wyatt Tomchek, our colleague, about that, because it happened to us once at a UNLV women's game. When I just moved here, I was doing TV, Wyatt was doing radio, and it was just, oh man, that was tough. My ears were ringing for like a week after that. Anyway, for tonight, Home Run Derby. As far as bets, Kelly, you've heard a lot of different opinions today. You've gotten a lot. Are you going to dive in tonight?
I'm betting Alonso. I'm definitely Alonso. Doing the like bet two approach. Like I'm going to bet Alonso and somebody else. But Bort should kind of mess with me a little bit because I was thinking Jose Ramirez as well. I thought that number looked a little long on him. I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do now. But I definitely betting Alonso. Definitely betting Alonso.
If it was still bracketed, say 1 through 8, and let's say, you know, based on the odds, right? Jose Ramirez, who I like, he's 13-1. He has the 7th longest odds. Let's just say Jose Ramirez was the 7 seed. Not that in the past the bracket actually matched the odds, but let's say he was, it would be a lot easier to make a case for Alonso then, where I would be saying, okay, because Alonso would be likely the number 1 seed.
Right.
You're seeing them on the opposite side of the bracket. Then you are picking one from the top half, one from the bottom half, because this is now reseeded. It's a little bit tougher.
It's a good point, yeah.
Where there is a much greater likelihood, let's say Ramirez hits the 4th most homers, he gets in, but then he faces Alonso, and now you've got two futures that will knock each other out. Now, is that, you know, would you rather have that than, say, having to buy in on Alonso at a number half that price just to cover yourself? You could make a case that it could still be worth it in certain situations, depending on how deep of a long shot you are betting on, especially if it's a double-digit shot like Ramirez in this case for tonight. But it would give me some hesitation.
I think that's a great point, and maybe the way to go about it. I mean, you are, if you're looking at Teoscar Hernandez, like Mark Borcher brought up, or maybe Jose Ramirez, you could bet those, right? Bet those before the Derby, and then bet Alonso after you get down to that final four, and you know, if he's not matched up with one of those guys.
Yeah. And that's the thing too is. Because
I'd rather get Alonso at this price, though. Like, I'm still going to buy
right, and I get that. And there's also a lot of different, you know, there's the in-game, and it's I hesitate to even say in-game, because it's almost like you're round one of the Derby is its own event.
Yeah.
Semifinals are its own event, because you have time to re-rack, the odds will come out, we'll have time to bet this. And I remember, what was it, you and I, we were on the air together, it was primetime action, I want to say it was the Dodger Stadium event, when... Wasn't that Albert Pujols who he had this marathon first round.
Yeah, I believe so.
He wins his first round, and you could just see like,
because wasn't it like his farewell tour?
It was. Yes. Yeah. I mean, Pujols. To say he used all of his energy in round one is kind of an understatement. And I remember that was the year. That was the Vlad Guerrero Jr. year. The odds come out for round two. Remember, Vladdy was like -300, and this was at when it was still the Will Hill app, before the integration happened with Caesars for us here in Las Vegas. And do you remember that? That comes out -300, and we're just going like, all right, you got to just bet the house on Vladdy. Like, you can't make this price high enough. And I just remember we bet it, small bet, obviously. This is the Derby. You're not betting much. But I just remember making a small bet, like -330 on Vlad in a second-round matchup against Pujols. And the number went to like, everybody was betting it. It went to like -700 right away. So you will see situationally – it is hard to reprice this stuff so quick.
That's a good point, yeah.
And if you're watching it, now that's a very extreme example of a guy who's literally, like, remember, they're toweling him off, they're pouring water on him, but that's a great example of how you can actually use this to your benefit, and it's a little bit cleaner than, say, the traditional in-game where you've got, like, a minute during a commercial to try to get a bet in.
Yeah, it's an extreme example, but I do think, and not that this is easy to predict, but I mean, geez, every year you watch the Derby, like there's always a guy who, it feels like 3-point contest too, right? Same thing where it's like, okay, a guy starts off hot, then immediately cools down that next time up, or vice versa, right? The guy who barely gets into that second round and then goes nuclear out from then on out. Those are tough to predict, but I think, live betting works very well during some of these events for that stuff.
I'd say now that there's the new timing, again, if you have missed some of the rule changes, it's still the 3 minutes, but you get a max of 40 pitches. And then the bonus round is no longer by time. The bonus round at the end, you just get 3 outs. You can get a fourth out if you hit a 425-plus foot home run. You would assume that, because of the type of players we have in the Derby, most guys will end up getting to 4 outs, but I guess the situation, how it would present itself this year, Kelly, is if you get, say, a guy, because, again, the timing's all going to be the same, at least, regulation-wise. But you get a time it goes to a guy who goes to a bonus round and hits, like, 10, 11 homers and is all of a sudden taking an abnormally higher, greater amount of swings than, say, most of the other guys, where you probably expect in the bonus round, you hit maybe 3, 4, 5 homers. Let's say somebody just goes off in the bonus round where it's untimed, and now he's taking – like 55, 60 swings in round one as opposed to maybe 45. That could be the one instance if you're watching it. And if it's not a guy that you really expected, right? Like if it's an older guy, say it's a Marcell Ozuna, who's not, you don't think of Marcell Ozuna as a bastion of fitness necessarily. You think of him as a guy who tries to rob home runs by leaping at the wall on balls that land at the warning track. That's what you think of Marcell Ozuna. I'm just throwing out like a hypothetical. That's probably the best example tonight of how it could play out if you're actually wanting to bet this and be on top of it from the odds perspective.
Yeah, and I like that. So you're on Alonso and Ramirez? Is that what you said?
I did not add Alonso. I reserve the right to definitely complain about getting another runner-up because it seems like I've been the king of the runner-up in this event. Again, going back to Miguel Sano 2017.
Yeah.
A lot of heartbreak.
I think I'm sticking Alonso and Ramirez. That's where I'm going.
Okay. Or it's going to be they end up meeting each other in the semifinals, and I'm like, damn it, I got to bet Alonso as you're sitting with a much better ticket in your pocket. That's at least what I'm afraid of on that. Other thing we should I just make a note of this, Kelly, the next time you have Jason Weingarten on. I just noticed that DK, they added a brand-new market in the middle of the season on the awards. Reliever of the year. That's the Rolaids, I believe, the sponsored Rolaids Relief Man of the Year award. What's funny to me is this was not a bettable option all year, and all of a sudden at the trade deadline, or really at the All-Star break, we have seen this added. Ryan Helsley is the -125 favorite there of the St. Louis Cardinals.
That's very interesting.
It's just random that an award market that is voted on would not be up all year, and now it is. I just find that interesting, and it's probably something worth diving into, especially based on how this show usually works.
Man, this award's been around for even longer than I thought, too. It's only 10 years, but still 10 years.
Yeah, the Rolaids Relief Man.
Yeah, I don't even know that I knew that was a thing.
Do we think it'll be easier to figure out how the voting works for this or the Euro 2024 Player of the Tournament? Because that was an exercise in futility yesterday. I felt bad for Will Hill and our friend Chris Felica, who had the field at a giant number and felt pretty good only for the panel of technical experts, quote-unquote. Very much quote-unquote on that, Kelly, picking Rodri, who was one of the shorter shots, as the winner from Spain.
Man, finally, I thought there was a lot of duds during that tournament. That second half, though, was pretty fun to watch yesterday, that's for sure. There were some chaotic moments, man, that corner kick, I thought England was going to score on a couple different headers, man. That was just incredible.
So many people had the Danny Olmo to win player of the tournament at giant numbers. He headed it off the line. You
it's
thought
incredible.
There was a great chance. Alas. Summer soccer in the books. We'll miss you, summer soccer. For Kelly Bidlin, for the rest of our outstanding crew, I'm Ben Wilson. We've done all that we can do. If you're listening on radio, Gojo and Golic is next. If you're watching on VSiN, Best Bets is coming up after this.